It is time for the Media Beat here on Robinhood Radio with David Tarachuk. David, of course, has his own website, themediabeat.us. You can also find him on Huffington Post. And he also is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be with you again.
You know, I'm looking at the email you sent, and that is David sent an email to me about a brand new ethics-centered website from PBS and WNET, Chapter and Verse. So explain a little bit about what that is, David.
Oh, I'm glad you saw that. Yes, my media analysis and my sort of ethics ethical ruminations, if you like, are spreading. I have a new platform to appear on. PBS has a new feature on its website. It's associated with the program that I used to work on, the program that doesn't go out on television anymore, but it still exists as a website. Do you remember the program Religion and Ethics News Weekly? It ran for 22 years and came off the air just about the time that the Donald Trump administration took office. There's no connection between those two events, but I remember the joke at the time being certainly around the office at Religion and Ethics News Weekly. It was, well, who wants a program about ethics nowadays anyway? So anyway, the program is no longer on the air, but PBS and WNET, the originating station for PBS, do want to keep covering this area. So on the web, there is this new platform called Chapter and Verse, neat little title, I think, where various people get to ruminate and reflect on religious and ethical issues. I'm more ethical than religious in my outlook, so that's what falls to me. And this week, they're carrying a piece from me about illicit drug trials and the ethical foundations on which drugs are tested in this country being in themselves tested by an extraordinary case where a doctor, that's the whole point, a microbiology professor who is now dead, conducted an awful lot of tests on human beings, live human beings, of a vaccine that he developed for herpes. But it wasn't FDA approved. He did it in a rather hugger-mugger style, doing it in offshore locations in the Caribbean, and at one point in hotel rooms in Illinois, where he was based, the Crown Plaza Hotel and the Holiday Inn Express, not the sort of setting you would perhaps want for medical procedures, but that's what he did. The extraordinary thing is he has some support for this. He's no longer with us, but the company that he formed, which is called Rational Vaccines, seems to be becoming something of an exemplar for those lobbyists and campaigners who want looser regulations on scientific experimentation. Notable among them is Peter Thiel, who invested. You remember Peter Thiel, who funded the legal case again, which resulted in destroying the Gawker website, the gossip website. He's not only a campaigner against journalism he doesn't like, he's a campaigner against government regulation in many ways, but in this particular field of scientific research as well. Anti-regulatory fervor being fanned by campaigners like him, and in his case a very deep-pocketed campaigner who invested a huge amount of money in this very suspect drug trial company or vaccine producing company that conducted these illicit drug trials. It's an ethical quagmire, but it's one well worth taking. And in my role as a media critic and commentator, I felt obliged to tip my hat to Kaiser Health News which did an extraordinary job in revealing this case, which the FDA is now investigating as a criminal matter. Although, interestingly, it wants to try and keep it quiet, I think. It's a very embarrassing case. But Marissa Taylor of Kaiser Health News blew it apart. Very good journalism. A tip of my hat to her.
And what's wonderful about that is the more... There's some really good work being done out there. And the more that people who can find it... What I'm trying to say is there are a lot of people trying to expose things, not for the sake of exposition, but because they are well and truly messed up, and they well and truly need to be sorted.
And that's the role of investigative journalism, absolutely.
And that is the role, and it's sort of, you know, there's a lot of heavy lifting involved in that.
And there sure is.
You don't get a ton of credit, you know. It doesn't have the same, let's just say, hot sex appeal. You know, it's like, oh, I'm here on TV talking. You know, it just doesn't have the same je ne sais quoi.
Dogged shoe leather reporting is very different from
obliviating.
Sapphire word.
I don't know.
Obliviating
is not bad. Because that is the role of a bloviator, is to obliviate
fact. That's so true, yes. I wish you could combine the words.
You just did.
But the one bit of investigative journalism that could be seen as quite sexy right now, that I'd love to see done, and that's just what was said in the Helsinki summit.
Private
sessions with only three people, maybe four in the room. Putin, Trump, and
the two translators, and
a single interpreter.
No,
right?
There were two.
There were two. Well, the American one, a woman who lives in Arlington, is perhaps the only independent source for investigative journalists now, and of course that puts her in a very, very difficult position. Legislators also, in their fact-finding role, want to talk to her also. It would be nice. It would be very interesting. It might be crucial to find out what the Russians are calling agreements that were reached in that discussion, and which our own intelligence services, Dan Coats, the director of National Intelligence, says they have no idea what transpired in that meeting, which is a very, very curious position for our nation to be in.
So my question is, how would you just let's give a little clinic here on how one would go about getting some information.
Wow, that is a hard one.
No, but I'm serious, because it's just...
It's a serious matter. And, you know, interestingly, and it may be the only scope for movement in this logjam. The logjam created by the ethical barriers to certain behaviors. Generally speaking, as you know, I worked with the United Nations for a dozen years or more, and interpreters, instantaneous translators, contemporaneous translators, interpreters who work live as it happens, either in booths or, in this case, between two individuals speaking to each other where they don't share a common language, they have a somewhat priest-like, lawyer-like position. That code of ethics that applies there is that they're never to speak outside of the public translation that they're offering at the time about what was said. No second guessing, no reporting about anything else except the actual words that were said, transliterated into another language. So it's really hard to know how you're going to be able to get to the information conveyed in those two powerful deniers and liars. It's going to be hard. The way that the one little bit of wiggle room that there might be is that Congress can actually, in its investigatory oversight role, could actually subpoena the interpreter. It's a discomforting thought, but that may be the only way forward.
You know, it's interesting to watch the way communications failure at the White House is spread through all tentacles of what the White House does. But what I thought it really would improve when the guy from Fox came over as communications director as far as communications amongst people, because you can't be you can't come from a network and be a poor communicator, even though it's not.
I was about to bring up Bill Shine's name. Yeah. There is an ethical giant, of course.
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
A man who himself was subpoenaed by the federal grand jury into the allegations that Fox of a company-wide officially sanctioned policy of turning a blind eye to sexual harassment. Yes. Well, he's in charge of communications at the White House now, and it's been an interesting week for communications.
Well, that's what I bring up, because I did see the clip this morning when I got up of the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, live on TV doing an interview. With
he was
Barbara
talking
Walters.
To Andrew. No, he was talking to Andrew.
Andrea Mitchell was doing a on.
And he was at the Aspen something.
At the Aspen Security Conference.
But it was live on TV with him, and
live,
she read him the quote, and he made the mistake of laughing, and just basically.
Well, he couldn't quite believe it. Putin has been invited to the White House. He had to say those three wonderful words that sum up the week. Really, he said, "Say that again."
It was
and collapsed in sort of embarrassed laughter. I mean, he is the Director of National Intelligence, after all. He's meant to know things.
There you go. That's what I was about to say. There's just this communications is not ever going to be different in the Trump White House, because the president.
Not a hallmark of this administration, though. And why do you suggest?
Because he comes from a company that he owned and dominated for years, and the communications always came from him. And at 70 years old, I was speaking of someone who's 65, he's never going to change.
I suspect not. I mean, I remember the classic case here in New York where he called New York journalists and pretended to be, I forget what
Barron,
phony
John
name
Barron.
He used, but he pretended to be his own spokesman.
And he used the name John Barron.
Saying great
which is,
things about himself.
And I'm not trying to give him an out, but it is an out. He has done what he has done for his whole life. Is it going to change? There's not a chance in the world.
Well, the other thing that's mildly alarming about what you say, about there not being a chance in the world, and this is a true source of frustration to me who has... wax astrological. I've got way too many planets in Libra to live in this day and age, because I just in my solar plexus, I revolt at the idea that there are two separate stories about the same thing. There's always middle.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes me crazy. So I'm waiting for someone to come along and say, right, here's the event. Now, have at it for your various constituencies. But here's what happened. Joe and Bill turned up. Joe and Bill disagree on the fundamental premise of what time evening begins. So... Joe said, at 6 o'clock. Bill said, it's 3 o'clock. I was like, okay, good. Now, perfect, thanks. Now I know what happened, and you can all go play on TV and post and speak and tell me your opinion of what happened. But the fact that we just can't even get, I have lived long enough to really have not agreed with the various people in my life about every single thing. It's just, it's preposterous, that notion. So the fact that the ability to have a different view is somehow considered inefficient is just, it just, my brain starts,
Well, perhaps you're also uncomfortable with what is increasingly being called the post-truth society.
But that's I'm not that, uncomfortable. That I'm annoyed.
We, I mean, we're flying in the face of that old Daniel Patrick Moynihan adage that sustained us for so long in our democratic discourse, which is that he said you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts.
But what has happened, and I, you know, I'm sorry, I'm sure everybody will take a dim view of what I'm supposed to say, is by standing there constantly, there's nothing more annoying than a hall monitor. So since so much time has been spent, I don't know if you remember, but several years ago, the Washington Post started a fact-checking thing, and X number of Pinocchios. You know, how blatant was the... how blatant was the post-truth?
How blatant a lie was it?
Right. Yes. Now, and
how long was the nose?
And the thing is, in politics and in televised politics, you know, you really are selling a bill of goods. You're not saying, oh, yeah, I was out yesterday hunting the Russian spy who's walking around with a briefcase full of plutonium. By the way, did you see the story? It was in the Idaho Statesman, of all places, of the uranium or plutonium or something that was in the Marriott parking lot that disappeared?
Yeah, I saw.
Right. So, hello. But anyway,
yeah,
it's just an example of what is in the paper and what isn't in the paper. And so there is what I am trying to say is there is a level of dissimulation involved in all of this. So you've got to manage those levels. And I don't think and this is the thing, I think people will take a dim view of my saying, is I don't think that's being competently done on any side.
Well, there's a lot of frenzy in the air. That's one of the most troublesome things. The cool search for the truth, typically and historically, has gone to the dogged shoe leather reporter. This doesn't seem very applicable here, but it could be if people would just calm down for a minute and say, "Hey, let's get to the truth here. Let's just." It was an old phrase used in journalistic newsrooms not so long ago. So let's flood the zone, bring in a lot of people, just put a whole lot of resources into the matter of finding out the truth. Let's stop for a moment just doing the constant reactive journalism of, wow. Did he say that? Oh, and did that just happen? Yes, it did. And off we go to one of these, another of these frenzied discussions on TV, rather than turning to the backbench and saying, let's get out there and really find out what's going on.
And apropos, I'm going to skip to your other home country for one sec, all right?
Well, it's been in the news this week, hasn't it? The beginning of the week, anyway. It seems like an eternity ago.
No, yes, but it was...
Trump was there before, in between immolating NATO in Brussels and then giving away the nation's credibility completely in Helsinki, Finland. He did actually go to London and Oxford and Scotland.
Did you ever think that... His visit would make the meeting with the North Korean leader look great.
Does anyone think that?
Speak about comparing and contrast.
Model of sanity. That particular meeting all those weeks ago now. Yeah.
But and listen to how that was talked about.
Oh, sure, another frenzied occasion. But, yeah, right. Historic. It was called. I remember. It was. Well, I mean, journalists can't really be faulted for the fact that they use headlines a lot, but sometimes, they use headlines all the time, just certain kinds of labeling goes on, which becomes sort of lodged in our minds, and we forget that the real job is to dig deeper than the headlines.
So apropos your home country, you're absolutely right. And we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. But apropos your home country, this is my problem. But I cannot help but think that the ground is being laid for another referendum. And I keep seeing little things that suggest
the referendum on Brexit.
Yes.
A do-over, because it's so difficult now that almost everybody, except, of course, the hardline Brexiters themselves, are thinking, my God, how do we get out of this mess?
And so I just, every so often someone will say, oh, blah, 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 no, and let's talk some more. And then the other thing that's happened is there's been a transatlantic just
intervention.
In the press. No, what has happened is our press has become more, even though we have different libel laws, obviously, it seems that that our press has adopted more of a Brit tabloid. But what they don't understand is that they have to put the good information at the very end of the story. He's like, oh, so, yes, and by the way, this was all sorted out a week and a half ago, so never mind. So that whole twist isn't, Americans, I have to say, too, that just don't get that at all. So you've got that going on in terms of just trying to make your brain interpret or analyze the information that's being put out. But if you watch if you do make a habit of looking for the very faint pencil line, I'm wondering what you do. You think it is a possibility? A new referendum is a possibility.
Oh, it's a possibility for sure. Constitutionally, there appears to be no formal structure for initiating it, given the way that it was framed in the first place. It was a binding decision, and no provision for a redo. However, politics being politics, everything is in the realm of possibility. I mean, Harold Wilson, the great 1960s prime minister, great in the sense that he was a great politician. He was a wily individual par excellence. Harold Wilson had a favorite phrase. He says, politics is the art of the possible. So if it gets to the crunch, and I think you could be right that we're getting towards some form of crunch here on just about every front, not least Northern Ireland, as we speak today. The longstanding 20 years now peace agreement that has kept Northern Ireland peaceful and no longer the troublesome internationally embarrassing case of violence on the streets and a low intensity war going on continuously, is coming under strain because of Brexit. And for the first time in all of this 2 years of agonizing about how to actually implement this decision that the British public voted for in its referendum, Theresa May has finally gone to look at the border, which is what is in danger of being recreated because of Britain's exit from Europe, which would take Northern Ireland with them. However, Southern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, is all in the same island with Northern Ireland. Of course it is, I mean, by definition. And this is one of the most pointed and awkward problems that Europe, Ireland, and Britain are trying to sort out. But she's not attended to it until now. That's another area in which there is great pressure from just about everyone who has anything to do with the issue. It is completely bipartisan. There isn't a partisan ounce of a discussion about it in Ireland itself, either north or south. And there's huge pressure to say, hey, we've got to abandon this suicidal path. So we'll see, to use a favorite phrase of the president.
We'll see. By the way,
we'll see what happens.
I hate to say this, and we have to go, but my dad used to say, we'll see all the time. What are we going to do? We'll see. And with that, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much, David Taraschuk, The Media Beat.
See you. Thanks so much.
And, of course, you can hear The Media Beat right here on Robinhood Radio on Friday mornings. We broadcast during the week at our noontime hour and also on the weekend. And, of course, on demand at robinhoodradio.com on the web.